right, Sylvia. Look at me. I'm outside going to check the mail. And I'm asking you if you can please, pretty please, send me one of your videos. I love it so much when you just send them to me. Yeah, I don't like buying your stuff. It makes me feel weird. Could you please send me one, though?
Where did money come from?
Money came from me, my brother, and then my dad.
Did they know where the money was going to?
They didn't know that it was going to a cam model. I was saying that it was going towards my Twitch streaming, like advertising, like putting my name out there and that type of thing.
But based on what you're telling me, only so many people make so much money. I think just a few make a bunch of money.
Right.
So that was like the ultimate goal is to get to that.
I was hoping that the stars would align and then I would be like one of those people because I was good at the games and I'm a funny and pleasant person on the camera and that type of thing. So.
What the fuck?
Welcome to this episode. I know, I wasn't here last week, and I'm so sorry for that. But I'm here now, and so are you. And today, I've got a doozy of a tale for you. But first, for those of you who have never tuned in to What the Actual F before, hi, my name is Harmony, and I'm your host. Now, no parent is perfect, but for the most part, we do our best. Speaking as a mother, it's really tough. There's no instructions, there's no manual, and most of the time, there's not a lot of help. Also, side note, my voice is cracking here and there. Don't know what's going on, I'm not sick or anything, but we can just pretend it's not happening, okay? Thanks, Pookie. Now, as a parent, I'm gonna go ahead and say right off the bat, I fail. I fail often. I learn, and I try to do better next time. However, I don't do anything that would be considered abusive, I'm not hurtful, I don't do anything that would degrade or traumatize my child. But don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean on a daily I don't read some horrific stories, especially since I dive into crime and bringing you tales of such about parents who are just that, abusive, cruel, and sometimes even murderous. The thing is, a lot of parents out there fail their children. You yourself may be a child of failed parenting. Child abuse and neglect can manifest themselves in so many different forms, many of which that can play right out in front of us and we be none the wiser. These cause different varying degrees of pain and trauma to those who are involved. Each case is so disturbing and different and devastating in their own unique ways. This story, however, isn't about child abuse or neglect. In fact, it's about parental abuse and parental neglect. The thing is the majority of parents out there do love their children unconditionally. Without reason, no bounds, nothing could stop the love that most parents have for their offspring. The belief as a parent is that you're doing your best to raise your kids to be their best. The hope, at least for me as a parent, is that I'm raising good people. People with strong morals, a sense of care, responsibility, and respect for others. Who also will speak as they need to and not be silent, allowing the world to step on them. But doing so with a respectful manner of oneself. I want my boys to be able to take on the world. No matter how terrifying it is as they face it. Do I fuck up? Oh yeah, all the time. Do I try to fix my mistakes? Every single day. My belief as a parent is the more you give, try, and show your children, the better they will be. They will become responsible, productive, and members of society that you can be proud of. Unlike the child I'm going to tell you about today. Now, he is a grown man, but he is nothing but a man-child. This is a story of what happens when children abuse unconditional love from their parents. This is a story of how you can give your children everything, and it's still not enough. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, allow me to tell you the story of Grant Amato, the family annihilator.
I need you
to be honest with me, man. I need to have closure.
The Amato family lived near Orlando. I wanted to say that in case any of you do not live in Florida. And when I say they lived in Chuliota, you're going to be like, I'm sorry, did she just speak another language? What the fuck? Where is that? They lived right near the home of Mickey Mouse. That's what I'm going to say. However, their address, for all intents and purposes, is and was 2112 Sultan Circle in Chuliota, Florida. And this is where the gruesome event took place. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. Let's just introduce the family. Margaret Amato was 61, and she was married to Chad, who was 59. They had their three boys, who, one, Jason, he was the oldest, and he was actually Margaret's son from a previous relationship. However, when Chad and Margaret got together, Chad was like, hey, listen, I love you, and I love your son, so I'm gonna adopt him, and we're gonna have a family. That's exactly what he did. Jason was just 3 years old when Chad stepped up to be Jason's father legally, and that's what he did. Spent his life being sure to be the dad to not just Jason, but the other two boys that would introduce themselves throughout, well, this marriage. First up, they had Cody in 1987. And lastly, in 1989, baby boy Grant. You know, the topic of this story today, the reason that we're here. Now, Chuliota, the town in which they lived, is actually a derivative of a Creek Indian word. I am not gonna try to say the word because as a Native American, I do not want to disrespect my heritage by mispronunciating this word. Feel free to Google it and take a shot at it yourself because I'm just not gonna. I'm gonna sound like an idiot. And my ancestors will be in their graves just like this. Bitch. Now, this word does have several meanings, including Isle of Pines, Land of Lakes and Pines, and Beautiful Place. Chuliota was settled shortly after the Civil War. It is a unincorporated designated place, and it's located in Seminole County, for those of you who may be even more curious, but again, this is right near Orlando, about 25 miles east. It's far enough away from the area to actually be considered rural instead of like city populous, or like urban. So in 2019, this is the year that this story, the gruesome event, takes place. Jason was actually living in Winter Springs, Florida, and working as a mortgage loan underwriter, so he wasn't at home with the rest of the Amatos. Chad and Margaret Amato had actually been extremely hard workers throughout their lives and were doing really well for themselves. Chad was a pharmacist at CVS Health with a passion for computers and technology, describing himself as a self-taught computer guru. Margaret was a senior operations manager at Nuance Transcription Services. Do not ask me what the hell that is because I could not tell you. They lived in a rather spacious 4-bedroom home, and that was situated on just under 3 acres of land. Chad and Margaret had recently bought a home in Tennessee as well that they were planning to move to as soon as they retired. The Amatos were an extremely tight-knit, football-loving family. In fact, they were described as never, ever, ever missing a Florida Gators game. That was like their team. If you don't live in Florida, there's like a massive rival here, okay? It's between the Gators and the Seminoles. If you're not on one side, then you're wrong. It's just how it goes. You've got to choose. Don't ask me though, because I'm not going to choose. I don't watch football. I genuinely don't care. Hooray, go team, go sports. Woohoo! I don't give two shits. But fantasy football, I'll play that all day. All day! Sorry about that. Let's go ahead and take a little break so I can compose myself and we can come back and talk about murder. Okay, we're gonna take a break now. Enjoy this audio!
I think the only other game that we really played was Fortnite, but then that was starting to get to, like...
That's a big deal right now. Yeah. The youngest kids all over.
And actually, yeah, during the time that I was, that I wasn't working as a nurse, I tried to do the whole Twitch streaming thing.
Margaret's greatest love in her life was absolutely her family. However, another great love of hers was horses. In her free time, she could be found at Miracle Lane Stables. She'd be there tending to Lady. Lady was a neglected ex-racehorse that she rescued in 2009. Margaret was described as being kind, caring, and gentle. a truly rare soul. She truly adored Lady, despite how many times she was actually bucked from the horse's back as she tried to train her. Many people would have called it quits, but she didn't give up on Lady. Margaret was a tough, strong woman. Sadly though, Lady would end up passing away, and Margaret could go to the stables even though Lady was no longer there, but she still stuck around. She would help look after the other horses and just be around the animals. For her, animals had this like calming effect on her, and I get it, I like animals more than people, so I totally understand. Sorely though, as 2018 entered into the picture, this situation at home that started to begin got too intense, and she didn't really go to the stables anymore because shit at home was just getting real tough. You see, Grant was starting to have some issues, and it was really starting to affect the family. Grant and Cody Amato did everything together. Not only were they brothers, but they were like best friends. They both attended Timber Creek High School, where they were on the weightlifting team together, and then when they graduated, they both enrolled in nursing school, hoping to ultimately, specialize as nurse anesthetists together, maybe even at the same hospital or medical facility. The pair even dreamed of owning matching BMWs and living right there in the family home while their parents enjoyed retirement in Tennessee. This was the plan. However, it didn't work out this way. And that's exactly why we're here. Grant and Cody did go to nursing school and they did qualify as nurses. But while Cody thrived as a nurse, Grant started to struggle. As planned though, they both enrolled in a course to become nurse anesthetists. Cody passed the course, but Grant, he failed. Obviously, the plan is definitely off the rails now. This brings us to June 2018, when Grant was fired from his nursing job at Advent Health in Orlando for stealing medication. There was a certain drug that he seemed to have a favoritism of, and this was an anesthetic drug known as propofol. I believe that's how you say it, and the drug is described as a short-acting medication that results in a decreased level of consciousness and lack of memory for events. Also notably in 2009, this drug gained notoriety as one of the drugs used by Michael Jackson, which resulted in his death. There were also a mixture of benzos as well in his system, but propofol was involved. So Grant was arrested and charged with grand theft. He was also accused of improperly administering medication to his patients. When he was questioned by hospital authorities, he claimed he administered the drug to patients because they were not adequately relaxed. He wanted them to feel good. However, that's not exactly how nurses work. You can't just go pass out medications willy-nilly to patients. So as a result, he was fired. This caused him to get more isolated and become extremely depressed. He turned to the internet, where he spent countless hours in his bedroom just soaking it up. He slept all day and stayed awake all night. He would spend his time on the internet gaming and live streaming. Along with his mental health, his physical health also began to deteriorate. His weight plummeted and he looked kind of like a walking corpse. I'm not even joking. You can look up his arrest video and stuff. His face is sunken in. He looks real rough. Online, Grant would portray himself as a professional gamer and a wealthy bachelor. Two of things that he was not. He also portrayed himself as a man who had his own place and drove that BMW. You remember the one that him and his brother were gonna get? Yeah, that's not true either, because he didn't have either of those things. His friend group online was none the wiser that any of this wasn't true. The online group really had no idea who Grant truly was. Grant was a 29-year-old unemployed nurse who had recently been fired, living at home with his parents, and drove bum 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 a Honda Accord. Which, side note, there is nothing wrong with that, but it ain't no BMW. So I think we can all gather that Grant is a little old liar.
Okay, so you had one of his credit cards.
Yeah.
And what were you buying with it?
Well, what I was doing is over the past 4 months or something like that, I've been talking to this woman online.
Who's she?
She's as embarrassing as it is. She's a cam model.
A what?
A cam model.
Sorry.
Do you guys know that? Nope. A cam model is like they It's like a virtual girlfriend, I guess you'd say.
Okay.
Like that type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the money went to her.
Okay. Where's she at?
She lives in Bulgaria.
Where?
Bulgaria.
Where's that?
Over in Europe. It's like outside of Germany.
Okay.
Something like that.
You ever been there?
No.
Okay.
So it wasn't that serious.
Okay. What would you give her money for?
Just for like the time online with her.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was just like that type of thing.
And what did she charge? By the minute? By the hour?
Minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much is it per minute?
Oh God, I think it was like 90 tokens a minute, and it's like the conversion rate for all of that is $600 for like 5,000 or something tokens or something like that. So, and then it was 4 hours a night. So that's basically just where all like the cost went to was you pay real money for the tokens, then you use the company's digital currency for that.
So you do that. And when did you meet her?
I met her beginning of July. Yeah, at the very beginning of July.
We need to talk about Sylvie. Sylvia Ventislavova is a Bulgarian webcam model. Grant would lovingly refer to her as Sylvie. Sylvie would quickly become the most important person in Grant's life. This all happened rather quickly when he met her on a live streaming pornographic site, you know, where you can find cam girls. Every single night, Grant would spend hours watching Sylvie perform webcam, you know, acts and little fun times and things for her viewers. Now, to watch her wasn't exactly cheap. It was 90 tokens per minute. Grant would buy about 5,000 tokens, which ended up equaling about $600 every single night. Or sometimes multiple times in a day because he just wanted to see Sylvie so bad. It wasn't long before Grant began showering Sylvie with gifts as well. He would send her items like clothes and sex toys, you know? Yeah, he thought that Sylvie was his girlfriend. While she didn't return any feelings back to him, she did appreciate his generosity with all of his money. But here's the thing. A little tiny issue, something that Sylvie didn't actually know. It wasn't Grant's money. In reality, he was stealing from his father and his brother. In just 3 months, Grant had burned through over $200,000 of his family's money, all so he could, you know, satisfy his obsession with Sylvie. He lied to his family, telling them that he was using the money to promote himself as a gamer who was live streaming all of his, you know, his games and all of what he was doing right there on Twitch for everybody to see. So he had to put money into it, because that's how you become a famous live streamer. There is actually a video, I played it as the intro audio, but Grant is walking to his mailbox at his family's home and he's like begging Sylvie to send her videos to him for free because you just feel so weird buying it. Oh, you feel weird? Yeah? What about the $200,000? That didn't seem so weird for you. He is a weird man though, like he really is. However, as weird as he is, again, he wasn't covering the bill for his obsession. And soon, everybody was gonna catch on to what was going on. And that is no bueno for Grant.
So how much do you think you spent?
Probably close to like $200,000, I'd say.
$200,000?
Grant Amato's family was surprisingly kind and understanding despite the thousands he had stolen. Added on to that was the months of lying as well. They still continued to like have his back and be there for him. Chad even took out a second mortgage on their house in order to pay the debt that Grant had accumulated, as well as his legal expenses for the grand theft charges that he was facing for stealing those medications at Advent Health. His dad was like, dude, it's okay. Like, I understand shit's been real tough. I'm gonna cover this, but like, I'm not happy about it. Like, let's just stop before it gets worse. Instead, Grant took advantage of all of this. Because it came to Chad's attention that Grant was in the process of fraudulently taking out a line of credit in Chad's name. Now, Chad, like, never reported this, however, because he did not want his son to get into more trouble. But little did he know, this could have stopped the horrific events that were about to unfold, if he would have reported it. However, it did seem as though things were actually gonna get better, because in December, Grant's situation seemed to have, like, you know, a silver lining in a sense. The grand theft charges against him were dropped. Cody, Grant, and another friend decided to go on a trip to Japan. This is something that they had actually wanted to do for years, so it seemed as though this was a good thing. Maybe Grant was getting out of his funk and just, like, trying to take and face the world again. Cody did end up paying all of his and Grant's expenses for the trip, which amounted to roughly like $10,000, I believe. It was in that ballpark. Could have been a little bit more, could have been a little bit less. This is also a pre-COVID world, so like things were just a lot cheaper. I'm sure now that would be somewhere around the $20,000 ballpark area. Things are scary out there, guys. It's expensive. When Grant did return from the trip, he and his father began fighting like every single day. And this was over Grant's lifestyle. And then the fact that he didn't have a job added on top to it, like everybody else was footing the bill for Grant to live. And Grant was just like, yeah, so what? I don't give two shits. On December 19th of 2018, Grant left the house after a pretty rough argument. He then texted his mother saying that he was, quote, really tired of everything and I'm just gonna handle this my own way. So Margaret got like pretty concerned by this because, well, she didn't really want all of this. She didn't want all of this to be happening. She just didn't want her son stealing money and then like, you know, not trying to better himself in any way. His family still very much loved and cared for him and wanted to help him. They just didn't want to see him go down this horrific path of crime. Crime and just like, you know, not giving two shits about anybody but himself and of course Sylvie. So Margaret was extremely concerned and she ended up reporting Grant missing. She explained that he had been having some strong feelings of worthlessness and just been really depressed, which wasn't at all a lie. As it turned out, Grant had driven to his aunt Donna Amato's house in Apopka, Florida. This is about 40 miles to the west of where the Amato's house was. Again, also still in the Orlando vicinity, in case you're wondering. A little bit farther, but like still over there. Now, while he was at Donna's, he spent the whole day sleeping and then the entire next night completely awake. However, there was probably a reason for why he was staying awake, and Donna sort of kind of began to notice. And she noticed because things started to go missing. Well, it wasn't really things as much as it was money, because she started to see that there were like mysterious charges when she checked her bank account. And do you want to know what they were being charged to? That's right, Cam Girl's website. You know, the one where Grant would go and just talk and watch Sylvie at night. He had done that now to his aunt, using her money. Donna then called Chad, telling him what Grant had done. Chad pleaded with her to please not call the police, please don't press charges, he would handle it. He said that he would pay her back every single dime that Grant had used. Just please do not call the police. Again, his family is genuinely trying to stop all of this from happening, and Grant is like, fuck you, I just want the money and Sylvie. And even though Chad and Margaret are still desperately trying to help Grant, he is about to make a very horrible decision. But I don't want to get up there yet, because we still gotta talk a little bit more about what happens. Because at this point, Donna is just like, okay, you know what? Okay. However, just as she kind of thinks that it can't get any more strange or weird, Chad broke down crying over the phone. He actually told her about how much grief that Grant had been putting on the family for so many months and how much it had cost to pay back all of his debts. She said that as he was breaking down, all he wanted was for his son to just, you know, like fix his act. He didn't want him to go to jail. That's all he didn't want. He didn't want that for his son. This brings us to December 22nd of 2018, when Chad, Margaret, Jason, and Cody all staged an intervention. They came to Donna's house and told Grant that he just needed to get some help. Chad, Margaret, and Cody drove him to a rehab center in Fort Lauderdale. Grant did voluntarily enroll in a 60-day program for sex and pornography addiction. However, yeah, this wasn't gonna be a happy ending. Come on, guys. Grant ended up dropping out of the program after roughly 14 days, like 2 weeks. He left on January 4th of 2019. Sadly, this whole treatment was paid for and there were no refunds. It cost Cody Grant's brother about $15,000, and he got none of that back. This is where shit's about to get real bad.
Records show he argued with his family in the days leading up to the murders because he stole $200,000 to send to a woman in Bulgaria he met on a porn site. Grant says their deaths had nothing to do with the woman, but he couldn't explain who would kill their family.
I don't understand why it happened. I was taking my steps forward despite everything that I was supposed to do.
This brings us to January 5th. Chad decided to take Grant out to the California Pizza Kitchen, and they were going to have lunch and just talk. At this restaurant, Chad took a handwritten list out of his pocket, handed it to Grant, and these were rules that Grant had to abide by if he wanted to continue to live in the family home. The rules dictated that Grant had to stop spending all his time online at night, and he had to get a job. They also stated that his parents were no longer going to pay his phone bill. You see, his previous plan had been canceled, and Chad had set up a new plan that did not have any data. That way, he couldn't sneakingly go to the cam girl site on his phone. He also had to pay back all of his debts to the family. Added on top of that, he had to go to therapy. He had to get help. He had to talk to somebody because something was wrong. He was also no longer allowed to communicate with Sylvie at all. And if he was caught doing so, he would be kicked out of the house immediately. Do not pass go, do not collect $200, go straight to jail. While Grant had already been in rehab, Chad had assessed his computer activity and actually gotten in contact with Sylvie. He told her that Grant had been lying to her and that all the money he had been spending on her was actually stolen from Grant's family. Now, when Sylvie learned that Grant wasn't this, you know, high-profile man who had a Beamer, but he was stealing money from his family, she didn't really want to have any more contact with Grant at all. According to Grant, Chad had basically destroyed everything on his computer and put a password on it, so he was unable to access it whenever he would be at home. If Grant did not agree to these terms, then he had to leave the home or he had to enlist in the military. That's it. So, how do you think Grant handled this? I'll tell you. He got real murdery about it, and that's exactly why we're here.
Grant Amato's attorneys arguing he should be released on bond, saying there's not enough evidence to hold him. The judge denying their request. His lawyer saying the state doesn't have a case.
We still do not have any, you know, forensic evidence that links him to this crime. So we just have to proceed with what we have. It is purely circumstantial at this point.
Things were a little strange at Orlando Regional Medical Center on January 25th. This is because Cody Amato didn't come in for work, which was nothing like him. His coworkers were convinced that something was wrong. This was completely out of character for Cody. One coworker said that in the last 5 years, Cody hadn't even missed one singular day of work. So, they were pretty sure that if he was gonna start now, he would at least let his employers or somebody know. So, the facility decided to call the police and ask if an officer could carry out a welfare check at the Amato home. At exactly 9:17 a.m., a Seminole County deputy arrived at the Amato home on Sultan Circle. Despite the fact that he made several attempts to get the attention of somebody inside, there was no luck. After he contacted his supervisor to tell them that the situation of, you know, getting ahead and trying to enter the home to see if anything was wrong, another deputy decided to pry the door open with a knife. Because they were given the go-ahead, they just couldn't get in, so they jimmied their way on in and they found a horrific scene. Lying in the doorway between the home gym and the garage in a semi-fetal position was Cody Amato. He was dressed in his nursing scrubs and he had been shot just below the eye. A handgun actually lay about 5 feet away from his body. They continued forward into this now house of horrors. The next body they came across was in the kitchen. It was that of Chad Amato. He was lying face up. Sadly, he had been shot twice in the head. He was wearing a holster on his hip with his handgun in it. As they continued forward, they found Margaret Amato in her office. She had been slumped over at her desk, and she had been shot once in her head. Gran Amato, however, was nowhere to be found, which was really weird. Of course, they tried to call him, but his cell phone had been disconnected. So, where was he, and did he know what had happened to his family, or was this gonna be a big surprise? Shock. It's not a surprise, but he's gonna act like it is.
Jason hugs his brother, saying he still loves him.
I'm gonna pray for you, brother, because I can't pray for Mom, Dad, and Cody anymore.
On January 26th, the next morning, detectives actually ended up tracking down Grant at a DoubleTree hotel by putting out a bulletin for his car, a 1996 Honda Accord, not a BMW. They asked him to come on down to the station for an interview, and of course, he agreed. At the interview, which was conducted by two detectives, Daniel Anderson and Eva Marie Moltari. That could be Moltari. I'm not positive how to say her last name. I'm sorry. Now, an extremely laid-back Grant talked about his passions, like, you know, live streaming his gaming, and complained a bit about his family. Grant actually described his father, Chad, as an angry, overbearing man who was physically violent toward his mother, Margaret. Jason and Grant himself, but not Cody, when they were younger, he said that they had experienced the abuse as well. Side note, nobody else ever said that Chad was abusive in any way, shape, or form. Nobody corroborated what he was saying. He told the detectives that he had been spending a lot of his father's money on talking to, you know, Sylvie and to watch her. She was, as he said, a Bulgarian webcam model. He actually acted a little like, this is a little embarrassing. Didn't stop you from murdering over her though, did it? Now, looking back at the amount of money that he actually ended up spending, he said that, well, it wasn't his own, obviously. It was his family. He admitted to the detectives that he had been quite foolish about it, and that it wasn't really a good thing that he had done. He shouldn't have done it, and he knew that. He said, quote, spending that amount of money, it's idiotic, especially when you're not making it. So he knew he had done wrong, at least in the stealing aspect. He may still have been in denial about the fact that he had just murdered his family, but we're not there yet. He told the detectives that his father had actually hacked into his computer while he was in rehab. This is when he gained access to his phone records as well as personal things that related to Sylvie. Then, that he had this information, Chad would go tell Sylvie all about Grant. You know, that he was actually unemployed, that he was still living at home with his parents, and that he had stolen money from them in order to talk to her and buy her gifts. He said also that his father had been nagging him, yeah, he used the word nagging, to get a job. Quote, it was with him every single day. He'd come home from work and he would just talk to me about the same exact thing over and over and over again. Detectives kind of found it rather odd and striking that just 3 hours after being interviewed, Grant didn't ask what happened to his family. He just sat there being interviewed. He didn't ask anything about what was going on. So, that's a bit strange, you know? Like, wouldn't you be a little curious as to why a bunch of detectives or police had come and found you, came and got you and said, we gotta talk to you about your family, and then you don't ask one time, what do you mean about my family? What happened to my family? Are they okay? Where is my family? Also, what? At no point did Grant ask what happened to his family. Not after the several hours of going into the interview, being asked questions, nothing. It was several hours in that detectives kind of had to, you know, spill the beans.
My dad and my mom were arguing, and then I was still just packing up all my stuff, or gathering the things that I could gather. And then when Cody got home, he started to transgress with my dad, and I was still kind of just staying out of it and doing my own thing. And then the end result was still the end result, and then I had to still leave.
Now, Well, around the, like, 3-hour mark, the detectives produced crime scene photos, displaying one on the table in front of Grant. At this point, he kind of, like, became visibly emotional, and then the detective laid out another and another. Did you leave the house with your brother Cody looking like that? Did you leave the house with your father looking like that, or your mother? Grant, as he cried, said no. He went on to say that he didn't know why he was being blamed for this last year of everything that he had been through, but he didn't do this. He'd been trying to move forward in a positive direction in his life, but his family wouldn't let it go. Every day, he said he was reminded of the trouble that he had caused, and that they kept saying and reminding him over and over and over again. There was nothing he could do in his mind, he said, to change it. Jason, Grant's older brother, came to speak to him in the interrogation room. Grant was still denying that he had anything to do with the murders of their family. Jason wanted to give Grant the benefit of the doubt, but he was actually seriously struggling with believing that Grant didn't just brutally murder everybody in their family. Jason told Grant that things just aren't adding up for him. Quote, I'm really confused, Grant. It scares me that you want to leave here and not face up to what happened. He actually ended up pleading with his brother Grant to tell him the truth, but Grant said that there was nothing more to tell. Before Jason left, he said, quote, I'm going to pray for you, brother, because I can't pray for Mom, Dad, or Cody anymore. Now, they do look at all family members, by the way, when this occurs, and they all had alibis. In fact, Jason had a solid alibi, so it couldn't have been him. He had been spending the day at work and returned at 6 p.m. and then went out to dinner with his long-term girlfriend. They were also joined by her two daughters, so many people could corroborate his whereabouts. He then spent the entire evening with them and didn't go do anything until the next morning when he took the two girls to school. So it was obvious that Jason couldn't have murdered his family and Grant still couldn't actually really explain what had happened. Grant's version of events were also a bit strange, but they went like this. On January 24th, he had been at home all day preparing for this job interview he had. This is when his father got home from work and he became confrontational. He was just in a real mood. As he had found out that Grant was still talking to Sylvie, using Twitter and, of course, Margaret's cell phone, because why wouldn't he use his mom's phone to, you know, make it obvious? This was actually true, by the way. Grant had insisted that his mother had given him permission to use her phone. She knew all about it. Yeah, okay. Chad, however, had grabbed him by the shirt and told him to get the hell out of the house. So Grant, in a hurry, packed his things. He and Chad stood in the doorway and talked for another hour and a half. Chad then gave him a credit card to use for a hotel room for that night. Then Cody came home and Grant briefly spoke to his brother. He then said goodbye to his mother and Cody, walked him out of the house. By this time, it was somewhere in between like 12 or 12:30 in the morning, something like that, on January 25th. When he last said he saw his family when he left the house, they were still alive. Grant then said he got in his car and drove to the local Publix grocery store. He used the store Wi-Fi so he could find directions to his job interview the following morning. He then fell asleep in the parking lot and woke up around 6:45 in the morning and then drove to the interview.
The facts will get there. And then you're going to ask, hey, can I talk to you and tell you what happened? And the answer is no. After we walk out of the room, like I said, it's done. There is not a second chance. There's only one time to make a first impression. You heard that one before? This is it. I believe you're not a bad guy. I do. I believe you want to tell us what happened. And there's a reason this got so bad. There's a reason.
Okay. Despite Grant, you know, insisting that he was not responsible for brutally murdering his family, nobody believed him. I know. Not like the evidence was telling a story. Those who were interviewed during the investigation was Cody's girlfriend, Sloane Young, and she told detectives that Grant had actually stolen about $60,000 from Cody. He also stole Cody's gun so he could sell it. Well, he actually sold multiple guns of Cody's. Sloan also told them how Cody had expressed a somewhat like fear as things started to get more unhinged with his brother. He said that he was afraid that he may end up just killing everyone eventually. No joke, she actually said he may kill everyone. Then on January 28th, Grant was arrested and he would be charged with 3 counts of premeditated first-degree murder. Naturally, like most killers, he pled not guilty. He did have a bail at $750,000. However, he wasn't able to use any funds that belonged to his parents' estate, so he wasn't able to actually make this bail. His trial began on July 23rd of 2019. If Grant was to be convicted, he would face the death penalty. The prosecution was, not really wanting this. Let's keep in mind a few things about the crime. The scene showed that there was no sign whatsoever of any forced entry into the Amato home. Not to mention that all of the valuables in the home were accounted for, you know, like PlayStations, TV, jewelry, computers. Everything was untouched. Anything that could make a pretty penny was still there. So that doesn't really show that there was a robbery or like maybe even a home invasion that had financial gain as motive. It, at least not for a stranger. For Grant, for sure. Lots of financial gain there for him. A digital forensic investigator with the Seminole County Sheriff's Office actually processed all of the electronic devices in the Amato home. And this testimony that she had was of vital importance to the prosecution, building a timeline of what had happened the days that led up to the murder. And then, of course, the day of the murders. This is how the timeline goes as follows. Grant Amato spent January 24th at home with his mother, Margaret. This was the last time there was activity on her computer, and this ceased at 4:44 p.m. With this information, the prosecution then deducts that Grant shot Margaret right around 4:45 in the afternoon. She was sitting at her desk, probably not even aware that this was about to occur. At 5:25 p.m., the health app on Chad Amato's iPhone recorded him taking 67 steps, presumably from his car, into the house. Then for about half an hour, it was like 27 minutes actually according to the trial papers, there was no activity at all whatsoever on his phone. This means and indicates that as soon as his father entered the house, Grant executed him. The first shot to Chad's head didn't kill him. There was a trail of blood on the floor, which suggested that he tried to actually drag himself, probably toward a phone or some form of help after he was shot. He was then shot again in the head a second time, which did ultimately kill him. Then, at 5:52 p.m., Chad's iPhone was unlocked and the settings on the phone were changed. This showed that the phone would stay unlocked, and it remained unlocked until after midnight. Now, from here, they state that Grant waited for Cody to return home from work. He left work just after 9 in the evening. However, as soon as Cody entered the home, like he barely even made it into the house, his brother just right in the face. The prosecutor had this to say, quote, "For over 4 hours, with the bodies of his dead mother and father in the house, the defendant waits for Cody to come home. By any definition, the word cold, these murders were cold." At 11:32 p.m., a thumb drive with over like 600 photos, I believe, and videos of Sylvie was then inserted into the Grant Amato computer. You know, the one that he used, his computer. The one his father had actually locked, you know? Yeah, that one. This thumb drive would later be found by investigators in the pocket of Grant's jeans in his car. Just before midnight, Cody's iPhone was connected to Grant's computer. However, the process wasn't completed, which suggested that whoever had connected the phone to the computer actually didn't know the passcode and the trusting process couldn't occur. Within just a few minutes of all of this, the phone will be put in recovery mode. The prosecution believed that whoever was doing this was actually trying to wipe the phone. Just after midnight, Chad Amato's banking app was accessed using biometric fingerprint, meaning it was his actual finger, although he was definitely dead at this point. It was also noted that his index finger was less bloody than all of his other fingers. That means that it was most likely wiped of blood. This led to the information that it was most likely that Grant had used his dead father's, you know, fingerprint to access his banking app. This is when, at 2:54 a.m., Grant did access Wi-Fi. And then, at 3:06 a.m., he paid $599.99 to reopen his Camgirls account. Remember, you know, he said it was like $600 to get those tokens. Yeah, he killed his whole family and then was like, I'm going to talk to Sylvie tonight. What's up? This is like super fucked up, man. Grant is so fucked up.
You didn't shoot him. He didn't shoot him. Neither one shot them. Tell you. Look at him. He walked in the door, shot them, and he walked in the door. Because right down here is a bag he carries in. Dropped right there where he opened the door, walked in, and gets shot. There's Dad's lunchbox right there. Dad came home, was probably messing with it right around here. Arguments, whatever's going on, but there was even an argument. Dad gets shot, and he drops right here. It most likely either got pulled or crawled over here. Over here. I wonder what DNA is going to be in that blood right there.
It seems as though Grant absolutely was trying to stage a murder-suicide scene. He wanted it to look as though Cody had shot his parents and then shot himself, which would explain the handgun that laid right near Cody's body. Grant had strategically placed bullets around the murder scene corresponding to the number of times each victim had actually been shot. It was also theorized that Grant had put the holster with the gun in it on Chad's right hip in an effort to make it look and appear as though there was a confrontation between Chad and Cody. However, it was a cross-draw holster, which means that Chad, who was right-handed, should have been wearing it on his left hip. Furthermore, there were people that actually knew Chad and said that he didn't walk around at home with his gun just like willy-nilly on his hip. It was also noted and testified that the bodies of Chad and Cody appeared as though they had been moved. Chad had been shot in the back of the head, meaning he should have been laying face down, but he was actually laying face up, suggesting he had been turned over. There were two pools of blood beneath Cody, and one was larger than the other. The larger pool was closer to his ankles and his feet, while the smaller one was beneath his head when he had been shot, like right there. This, however, suggested that he was also moved, as the larger pool of blood should have been beneath where he was shot. Now here's the thing. All of these guns at the scene may actually leave more questions than answers. Richard Ruth, who is a firearms expert with Florida Department of Law Enforcement, actually testified that none of the guns found at the home at the scene were any of the ones that could have been used in the murder. Well, murders. According to Richard, he said that the bullets found near the bodies were actually not from the gun that killed anybody at the scene. Cody Amato, the medical examiner, testified, was not shot at close range. If he had in fact committed suicide, his autopsy would have shown that he was shot at an extremely close range. Margaret and Chad were shot at close range. This is strangely contradictory of, you know, murder-suicide. This indicates that all three murders had to be the result of homicide. Now, a friend of Cody and Grant's for more than a decade by the name of Blake Turpin actually testified about his 9mm Jericho handgun and how it had been stolen from a closet in his bedroom. However, he didn't actually realize that it was gone until several months after it had gone missing. This is because he rarely even used this gun. When he realized that it was gone, he did report it missing to the police. This was roughly about 2 weeks before the killings occurred. You see, he had actually had Grant and Cody and another friend over at his house to hang out and play video games, and at one point during the evening, Grant had excused himself to go to the bathroom. Grant knew exactly where most of his friends and family members kept their guns because they all just kind of shared the same gun enthusiasticness, you know? They were open about it. And also, if he was going to the bathroom, he would actually walk right past the area where the gun was kept. People actually believe that he stole that gun and that is what was used in the murders. Now, nobody could actually confirm that this was the gun that was involved in the killings, it's just kind of what some believe. However, people could sort of see exactly what was the motive behind the murders and why it looked as though it was absolutely Grant who committed them.
Then I'm done for good. When I'm done, I'm done. They won't believe, hey, can I come back and talk to you? The minute I walk out that door with your story is where you stay at. That's your lot in life. I am more than willing to sit here all day and all night if you want to talk to find the facts. But I can't, I told you from the beginning, I will not deal with somebody who's not being truthful with me. You're not being truthful.
According to the prosecution, they were showing that Grant had obviously spiraled into a serious depression after he was fired from his job. And, you know, the charges about stealing medication, although they were dropped, that still haunted and followed him. It wouldn't really be easy for him to get another job, so he was pretty depressed about that. He then began to communicate with a beautiful woman who gave him attention, you know, Sylvie. He quickly became obsessed with her, not understanding that to Sylvie it was definitely a job and about the money, but for him it felt real. Sylvie had no idea who Grant really was. She did somewhat believe he was a professional gamer and that he owned his own place and did drive a BMW. Yes, his father did in fact try to stop him from communicating with Sylvie by giving him an ultimatum. You know, stop contacting her or move the fuck out of my house. Like, bottom line, dude. Chad did also in fact reach out to Sylvie and he told her everything about Grant lying. This undoubtedly pissed off Grant. According to the prosecution, he was obsessed with her, and now she knew that he wasn't this amazing gamer and wasn't wealthy. He probably lost his chances that he thought he even had with her. Now, of course, upon hearing everything that occurred, Sylvie didn't even want anything to do with Grant anymore. According to prosecutors, because of all of this, Grant grew an immediate, intense hate for his family. Because he believed it was their fault that they had ended his relationship with Sylvie. You know, the one that he didn't actually even had. He was a customer paying money. They weren't in a relationship, he was just delusional. However, he still continued to send messages to Sylvie. He then reached out to her on Twitter and, you know, like stated, took his mother's phone and behind everyone's back tried to reach out. When people found out, i.e. Margaret and Chad, they became enraged, and this is when they threw Grant out of the house, which of course pissed Grant off even more. So, in retaliation, according to prosecution, he executed everybody that was at the house or came into the home that day. Because nobody was gonna get in the way of him and Sylvie. Although, ultimately, this action that Grant was taking would be the downfall of him, and he would never speak to Sylvie again.
Can't lie about this, Grant. You can't. This is too important for your family of what has happened. There's not somebody out running around the United States that killed him. There's not. There's nobody out there, some hidden killer. There's not. You don't show the remorse that you should for someone who's lost three family members. Body language, eyes, and demeanor. Here's the time, man. I know it's tough. Tell the truth, because when I walk out, there is no another day.
And it's going to look worse for you when we prove it.
There was something else that prosecutors used to prove their case. There was a letter that Grant had actually written to his online friends. These friends were six men that he spent much of his online time, you know, chatting with, if it wasn't Sylvie, but they were all in Sylvie's chat room. Grant had also been telling them the same lies about his life that he had been telling Sylvie. In this letter, which was composed sometime between when Grant left rehab on January 4th of 2019 and when the murders occurred on January 24th, Grant decided to come clean. He told his friends everything that he had told them about his life was just completely made up. That he actually lived with his parents and wasn't some professional gamer. That he was unemployed and didn't even drive that BMW that he claimed he had. He also expressed anger that he had toward his family and a number of reasons that made him so upset. First, he was extremely upset that they had actually made him go to rehab. But what he resented the most was that they had even reached out to Sylvie and revealed all of these truths about him. He wrote in the letter that his father was controlling and abusive, that his mother was simply around for security, and that his brother is, quote, controlling and doesn't understand how I could care for someone as much as I cared for Sylvie. In all of his many words, Grant wrote in the letter that his life was over, all because he no longer even had Sylvie. In fact, this is what he wrote. Quote,
Seeing her so happy without me in her life is something I hope you guys never have to live through. It is a feeling that rips your heart out and makes me realize how pointless everything is without her. He was a little obsessed and absolutely delusional. In the closing arguments, I want to state something. This is what was said. Quote, Grant fell in love with a woman by the name of Sylvie. Not only did he fall in love with her, he became obsessed with her. To the point that Sylvie is all that mattered. This seems to be the absolute truth. To the point that Grant murdered 3 people, all so he could stay in contact with her. Still don't believe me? No worries, we're not done yet. Grant's brother even testified for the prosecution about the relationship between his family members in the months that led up to the murders. It was actually an extremely emotional testimony. Jason told the courts about the ultimatum that actually, you know, Chad had given to Grant, and that there was a list of rules that he had to follow if he wanted to continue to live in the family home. The last time he had seen his dad and brother was the morning of December 22nd. Jason cried as he told the court that they had gone to their aunt's house for the intervention for Grant. After that, his father, mother, and brother had taken Grant to the rehab facility, you know, the one that he ended up leaving. Jason was asked whether his family and his father and his mother, if any of them had actually experienced or been abusive. While it was said Chad could be strict with them, Jason said that he was never actually abusive. Yes, they were spanked when they were children, but Jason never thought of any of the forms of consequences as actual abuse. He was never afraid or fearful of either parent and never saw his father abuse in any form anyone else. At the end of his testimony, one of Grant's lawyers asked Jason if he loved Grant. And in tears, Grant said, I loved both of my brothers. Yes, that was past tense. Obviously, I can sit here and tell you all about the prosecutors because Grant is actually sitting in prison right now, but his defense team did actually try to go down swinging. They gave a defense. A good one? No, but they definitely tried. They said that the investigators were just like too quick to focus on Grant, and they never seriously looked into any other suspects. They said that the investigators should have done a better job of like processing all of the evidence and stop trying to be so single-mindedly focused on Grant. According to the defense, a reason of if it wasn't Grant, then who else could it be, wasn't a good enough reason to find him guilty of the murders. Although that isn't exactly what the prosecutors were relying on, there was definitely evidence in a sense that it was Grant. I mean, the motive alone is there. The defense tries to claim that the prosecution's timeline of events just doesn't add up. They say that most of it is just speculation. The defense also pointed out that the fact that Chad accessed his bank account after midnight on January 24th, you know, means he was still alive. However, as mentioned, the prosecution very convincingly asserted that this was Grant's doing, that he actually ended up using his dead father's finger to access the app because it was wiped clean. There's not going to be a completely bloody hand, but one little area, just clean of blood. They also pointed out that there were text messages sent from Cody to Chad at 11:51 p.m. One of them said, Dad, for the third time now, delete the Blink app. Then, on January 25th, after midnight, this app was uninstalled from Chad's phone. If Grant was in fact able to use his dad's fingerprint to access the phone, then obviously he could plant all of this. The defense did argue that Grant actually had no motive to kill his family at all. He got along swimmingly with his mother, and he and his brother were very close. Remember, they were best friends. Furthermore, his family always gave him money whenever he needed it. This wasn't an issue, even though we know it really was, because he wasn't given the money, he was taking it. I know it's just insane that he tried to sit there and be like, hey, you know, I was given all of this. I would never kill them. It was completely apparent that, like, he was trying to cover his tracks, and the jury didn't buy anything that the defense was saying. Because, you know, they did end up, after 8 hours of deliberation on July 31st, 2019, they found Grant Amato guilty. Grant was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And he does currently remain incarcerated in a prison in Florida.
God have mercy on your soul. 30-year-old Grant D'Amato, hearing his life sentence without parole after avoiding the death penalty.
Saving our client's life, that's the the so-called prize in this. And finally, our heart goes out to Jason D'Amato. It just has to be devastating for him.
D'Amato was found guilty at the end of last month for killing his father, mother, and brother during an argument over money he sent to a woman he met online who lives overseas, then staging their murder-suicide.
From the emails that we got, they actually made contact with her. We knew who she is. We knew her real name. We even had an address for her, but we never had contact with her.
The defense says because of the amount of time the jury took to determine his guilt, they were hopeful at least one juror would show him mercy when deciding on death.
We feel that he is going to be a model inmate.
The state says they put together a strong case in a short amount of time, adding, under the new law, where all death sentences have to be unanimous, it makes it harder for prosecutors.
That's what happened in this case. There were a couple of them that just couldn't do it, and that's fine. I respect that. But that's just the way they felt.
That was the story of Grant D'Amato and his deadly obsession. Look, you can have an obsession all you want, but like, don't get creepy, weird, or murderous about it. Maybe also don't steal from people, especially like $200,000. That's pretty fucked up. The story of Grant D'Amato is one that leaves you wondering, what the actual? It's dark, it's twisted, and it's, well, a perfect story for me to tell you here on What the Actual F. One that, as dark as it is, I hope you enjoyed. It may be weird that I have this odd fascination with murder and all things that are strange and unusual that happen around the world, but that's because I think that there's more to existing than we'll ever understand. Like, what drives people to do such things like Grant did? Is it really the obsession he had with Sylvie, or was he unhinged, maybe mentally ill? Grant's not really talking, so maybe we'll never find out. However, as long as people do continue to kill, murder, and maim, I'm gonna continue to tell stories about all that is. Who knows? Eventually, maybe I'll throw in another haunted, scary story, or maybe I'll talk about some conspiracies. However, I do hope to talk to you next week on another episode of What the Actual F. Until then, I hope you stay safe. It's a dark, cruel, strange, and unusual world out there. And as much as I love telling you the stories that I do every week that I'm here, I don't ever want them to be about you. So, watch your back. Maybe. Watch your family, you know. They start stealing money, or maybe they start getting a small obsession with a cam girl. Just, maybe distance yourself slightly. Anyways, until next time, I love you, and, be safe, okay? All right. Bye now.